Okay, well, so I want to welcome everybody to the Building Service Performance Kickoff Call. We'll do some really fast introductions, and then we're going to have four speakers today. Also, Rex Brooks is one of the, you know, people who convened this project in the first place, and he can only join us for a short time in the beginning, so maybe his introduction could be a little longer. But let's see, I'm a specifications writer and research with WDG Architecture, and also have a nonprofit organization called Accuracy and Aesthetics.
And
so
your name is?
Person, Deborah McPherson.
Okay, next from the chat is Deborah Gondek-Becker.
Yes, hi, Deborah Gondek-Becker with Adelson and Peterson Construction.
And then we have Greg Rust.
Hi, this is Greg Rust. I'm with AgilePath working with the Air Force CTO.
Peter Yim.
Hello, I'm Peter Yim. I'm president and CEO of CIM3, an ISP, and also the dean of the Ontolog Forum. Thank you.
Rex Brooks.
Hi, I'm Rex Brooks. I have my own company, Starborn Communications Design, and the area of my expertise that's closest related to BSP is emergency management. I'm on the OASIS Emergency Management Technical Committee in several capacities.
Toby Considine.
Hi, I'm Toby Considine. At University of North Carolina, and I also talk about standards on the side, and I'm also on the OASIS OBIX committee. OBIX is an open building information exchange. It's an XML format for web services to building systems. I'm a convener of this. I called for the convention of this because being able to communicate with building systems isn't enough unless you can talk in bigger words. There's no enterprise programmer who really has a useful opinion about what the actuator should be doing right now. So I wanted to talk about the building systems in a higher level, and that led to me calling for convening this group. I'm interested very much in being able to make building systems accessible and part of the value propositions for owners, operators, and maintainers to kind of think, tie together commissioning and design and operation of buildings and also resale of buildings so that people will care about it.
Okay, now we don't have everyone on the chat line, so I'm going to have to call out phone numbers, and if you've already spoken, just indicate. Area code 919.
That was Toby.
Okay, let's see. Oh, 612, that's me. this is Michelle Raymond. I wear multiple hats, as people who have met me know, literally. I also do that figuratively in that I am involved buildings in services in multiple capacities. One, my primary employment is with Honeywell, and I'm a research scientist there. The other, I've worked with the same group that Rex has for emergency management. I've worked with Toby before on open building information exchange standards. I've been working with NIST recently on some other building standards. So, and then I also do emergency volunteer work through the Citizen Corps and New Emergency Response Program. So next we have area code 847.
Yes, it would be John Greenwell, president of Seaport LLC. We are the developers of an open source building services portal. We're very interested in disseminating data from the BIM environment through OBIX to our system.
And this is also Doug Wilson here with John in Seaport, and I'm John's software architect.
Okay. 714 area code.
I'm Bob Smith. I'm a professor emeritus, California State University, and involved with, on the one hand, OBIX and Toby's effort to raise the level of abstraction so you get a better conversation going. And I'm in the middle of some conversations with the City of Huntington Beach, all of the regulatory efforts that stymie developers as they try to cut through the environmental rules and regulations that in some intent really do match up with standards and expectation of services are far from being useful and usable. That's my main interest in this.
Okay. Let's see. That was 519. Was that yours? So 952, please.
I'm 519.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's pull you in, please.
I'm John Dickinson. I'm up in Canada. I work at the Institute for Research and Construction, and I'm part of the National Research Council of Canada up here. I'm being recently tasked to start looking into some serious issues in terms of simulating building performance, so I thought I'd better find out what you guys are doing.
Wonderful. Okay, so now 952.
That's me, Deborah Gondek-Becker.
Okay. 407.
Right here. I'm sorry. I was mute. This is Hector Torres. I'm an architect with Transsystems in Orlando, Florida. I'm also a member of the Building Smart Alliance. I'm part of the testing committee and been working with BIM for 2 years.
Thank you. 202.
That's me, Michelle.
Okay. My list must have resorted on me. 414. Okay, let's get that one. 816.
Yeah, my name is Roy Colasso with Honeywell Building Solutions. I'm the Open System Integration Manager working on our offer development team. I'm also a member and chair of the IABC, the Intelligent Integrated Buildings Council of ABA, and am following the BIM initiatives, and we'll be going to some training at Carnegie Mellon next month, I believe. So I'm very interested in what you're doing as well.
Thank you. 412.
Hi, it's Mark Dietrich. I'm the Director of Research and Development with Burt Hill. We're a large architectural and engineering firm, international firm. I'm based out of Pittsburgh, for years we've been dealing with building performance simulations through BIM, and recently we're getting involved in the on the operations side through our research. We're conducting a research study currently with Cisco, who's very interested in the whole convergence of building systems, and we're taking their connected real estate framework and mapping it to a potential LEED certification. That's my interest in this activity. Thank you.
Great. Okay, I think there are a few more who are calling in via Skype or that I may have missed. So go ahead and announce yourself if you haven't yet had a chance, please.
I guess that's pretty much everyone. There are a couple of people whose name are not on the session page. Maybe you didn't respond to the co-conveners. Please do so that your names could be added to the roster at the kickoff meeting, and everyone becomes a founding member of the group.
Well, thank you, and I'll turn that back over now that I've done my little part. Deborah, shall you?
So, Michelle, you have the slides, and I'm just going to have to wing it here with the slides.
Okay. Peter, assistance on the slides. When I bring them up, I want them to be in the VNC desktop. You've already done it. Thank you. All right. Deborah, go ahead. Please call out the slide number, and this is for all the speakers.
Okay.
Please call out the slide number that you're on so that those who are following this on their own machines where they downloaded it can follow along more easily. And also remember that when you're speaking,
You are not just speaking to the group of 15 who are gathered today on the telephone, but this is downloaded by hundreds or some thousands of additional folks who will listen to the audio and will look over the slides and hopefully will join us in this effort. So remember them when you're talking and call out slide numbers so that they can stay in sync when they're reviewing this on their own. Thank you.
Okay. So on slide number one, this is an overhead shot provided by Enuma Planning Service, which is a system that integrates BIM with GIS information and all kinds of different things. And as the slides go on, we'll talk a little bit about BIM Storm. It's a collaborative effort that people can do. but the main thing to know about the BSP group is that it's really an ad hoc group of a lot of different disciplines working towards a common goal. And one of the main things we want to do today, of course, is adopt our mission statement and the charter. So if we could go to slide two. The agenda today, we've done the welcome, and thanks everybody for participating. And at the end of this, during the discussion, we'll adopt the charter and the mission. The speakers today are first going to be myself, and then from the architect and specifier point of view. And then next is going to be Bob Smith, who's going to talk about environmental impact. And Michelle and Toby maybe switch, but Michelle's going to talk about emergency response. And then Toby, facility manager, also sometimes people call that owner-operator. And anybody who wants to participate in this project, the best thing to do is to get onto the mailing list, and that's where a lot of the discussions happen. But there's also regular conference calls that you can participate in. And as time goes on and we get more done, we're going to have more panel discussions and speakers and presentations. So if we could go to slide three. That's just an introduction. Again, I wanted to add WDG architecture also to that. Specifications and research. We're based in Washington, D.C. Super busy, do lots of high-rise commercial construction. Okay, number four. This is an overview of the demands that are put on to BIM data. Back in the old days, you used to always have the specifications were like right on the drawings. And now, building materials have gotten so complicated, the buildings themselves have gotten so complicated, that just capturing what the design is to build it is one thing, but now everything's extended even more so. And so I'll say that on the left side there, it's kind of what you might almost think of as like the inputs. The left side slide there, these are courtesy, by the way, of Building Smart Alliance, is the functional and physical characteristics. And so for BSP, obviously our focus is a lot more on the functional characteristics and also the services. So you're getting information not only from the architect, but also geospatial data, how much things cost. USGBC is a Green Building Council. That generates a lot of data. And so BIM is trying to hold it all together. And then the next challenge is then how does that go out? And so you could say that the right side is what the life cycle is more like the output. And each time it's moving around this wheel, it's changing hands. And the exchange requirements from one place to change hands to the other is really complex. And I guess my position is with these code templates we're going to talk about in a minute, that it also, this data needs to change their classification too. So, slide number five. Code templates are something that I just started making, I guess about 6 months ago, based upon these BIM storms. BIM storm is kind of fun thing to work with because it's not a real building. Like, you don't have any liabilities. You don't have, no real constraints as far as, money being part of it. It's just something you can kind of play around with. So the first thing that I did was went to look at BIMstorm LAX and identified 250 sections from Master Format 2004 that I thought, well, this could work for any building. And that basically was about 6 pages, and using the typical formatting that CSI uses, that's Construction Specification Institute. The next, for BIMstorm New Orleans, I took those master formats and just by hand literally mapped them to Uniformat, which is a lot more broad, and also OmniClass, which is a series of interrelated tables. And that was just kind of an exercise to see how well do these match up and where are their big holes. And then on the right side of that, it's more requirements. Like some of those requirements might be building codes, some of them might be tests for the materials. It's a little arbitrary, but the big push really is to fill in that right side of the different requirements. And then the goal really of putting together this data set is to develop sort of like a modular set of relationships. And like if you, everybody means different things sometimes when they say horizontal or vertical or even semantic relationships. I'm saying for this, that horizontal, I mean that that's the relationship between classes, literally going across the line there, and in any kind of, ASTM standards, ISO, different standards that are out there, that they would have some relationship with whatever material they're talking about. And then a vertical relationship might be a little bit more like going now to NBIMS or going to OGC, the Open Geospatial Consortium, or even linked open data, because it's not even just the buildings, it's what happens in there. And when you have a building like a library, they may have tons of data that's available to the public. So it's just really hard to get a grip on what all those things are. So let's see, now we're going to slide 6. So when you look at the BIM storm.
May I interrupt a little bit? I don't think the slides are numbered, so when you move the slides, maybe you call out the slide title as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this one should say Sample Building Fire Station. Does it say that?
I also forgot to mute everyone, so if I go out and mute everyone now, could you put yourself back online, please?
Sure.
With a star 3. Sorry for the interruption.
Can you hear me?
Yes, great.
Okay, good. All right, so the next slide should say Sample Building Fire Station. And I think if you look up there, now you can start to see a little bit about what these columns are and what's in these different, going across there. So I just took a very arbitrary stab at, like, what would a fire station be? Well, it's going to have overhead doors. It's probably going to be slab on grade. They could probably have, a green roof or something like that. And so then after that, talked with Finis Jernigan, who has been a participant in this project so far, and he's been a great, huge help because he was the architect of these fire stations. And some of them are real, and some of them are just like a fictitious model. And he's done some interesting calculations of how he figured out, like in a BIM storm world, how close do the fire departments need to be next to each other and whatnot. So he's looking at the services of that. And I took my initial stab at it and then compared it to what he really had. So I'm just kind of coloring things and doing different stuff with it, and wondered about trying to do something for BIMstorm Vancouver, which is in a couple weeks, but what's actually even going to be better is Building Smart is doing a BIMstorm, I think, July 23rd through 26th, and the focus of that is to move data in and out of a BIM, and there's an effort to make a building, like a theoretical building, called a BIM Smart Lab. So, I don't know, to take this table and look at that lab and try and evaluate that and attempt to describe it is going to be the next step. So if we could go to the next slide. It should say Building Service Performance Proposed Colors. Does it say that? Oh, wait.
Yeah.
No. Or is there a picture of, like, a wave? There should be a picture of a wave. There's not really a... Is that...
Building Service Performance Code Template Proposed Colors.
Okay, let me go. I'm sorry. It's a little bit out of sync here. Okay, somehow a slide must have gotten skipped. Okay, well, the proposed colors, this again was just sort of arbitrary, but what happened is that, obviously you pick red for a fire station, but then if this is really going to become like a graph-making system or some kind of visual language to talk about stuff, that to start to think about what colors really do start to make sense about these different facility types, And these 10 facility types were pretty arbitrary selection as well, but want to thank the ANUMA Planning System for providing these different models. And, in fact, I sent these colors over there, and then they recolored their buildings so that you can, when you start to get some of these big overviews of an entire area, you can say, oh, look, you know, the yellows, those are the schools, and the cultural facilities are this light blue. And some of them were taken off of some colors that OPS had in place, and some I just decided forever, but that's where it's starting. And then the next slide is here, it's called a fact sheet, and that's something that's going to be the next step here at WDG. There's a group of four people, and we're going to sit here and just look at these models and just start talking about these buildings from the architect's point of view. Like, what is this use group? What is this construction type? What kind of services might be provided by these buildings? And just start to think of, like, where do they belong in a grand scheme of things as far as the buildings themselves? Because what this is trying to be is a little bit of a framework that can extend way, way, way beyond the building. Because especially, like, when Toby starts to talk later, I'm sure he'll get into some of these problems that, like, you don't always get delivered what's in the design drawings. You know, your hope is to do that, but, you know, the fact is they may substitute all kinds of stuff, and it's very possible that it might be performance spec, and you really never have a product. So, you know, it's a bit of a challenge of, like, what the design intent is versus what the reality of the building is there. There's something that's got to get nailed down on that as time goes on. And then the last slide here is just a sample of, if you could, it says visualization, simulation, and analysis. So just assuming that really what these templates are trying to do is put the different building requirements and different ways of describing building components, and, you know, not just their physical but also their services, into some kind of relative locations with each other, so that you could sit there and compare a whole bunch of fire stations with each other, or you could compare, you know, a neighborhood might be a museum and it's got roads and it's got different things, and you start to ask these questions like, you know, how does the fire, where's the fire control room? What, you know, how does the environmental board go into these building documents that are so complex? Like, where do they need to find this precise information out from the building? Because there's always going to be way, way, way more in there than is needed by just your average Joe or somebody who's coming into building information much, much afterwards. And then the last thing I just wanted to close out with is that there's lots of people working on a lot of things that could all end up getting tied together. Hopefully there will be a big convergence. It's the International Code Council is working on smart codes, and that obviously would be a huge benefit. CSI is working on some dictionaries. The U.S. Green Building Council is doing lots of neat stuff. NBIMS, I serve on a couple of committees for the National BIM Standard. ISO has lots of standards that have been made more precise or made more broad and combined to suit different purposes. The Open Geospatial Consortium, obviously OBICS, and even OmniClass, just the whole structure of the OmniClass tables. That's just a small slice. There's so much that's all kind of heading in the right direction, and I think the BSP point is to get a framework that can work for everybody, and that's an open framework as well. So I'm going to turn this now over to Toby, and I'm going to mute myself as well. Okay? Toby, are you ready?
Hello, am I unmuted now?
Oh, yes.
All right. Okay. Hi, I'm Toby Constein. I've got to me, one of the things I want to accomplish is to hide some of the complexity and detail, because I don't think the day-to-day owner cares about it or talks about it. I have a vision somewhat similar to what I call the dashboard of a car as the interface, meaning a dashboard of a car lets you make decisions. That one in the middle tells you how fast you're going. You have a standard way to go side to side. You have a standard way to tell the temperature. You can find out facts about the car without knowing anything about what the building, what the car's control system is, without knowing whether it's a fuel injection or spark plugs, without knowing the details. Somebody has to know the details, and thank heavens they do. But an interesting fact to a car owner is 0 to 60 in how long, not combustion ratio. So combustion ratio is a path to get there, but what the car owner buys is performance, and what the car owner buys is interfaces that work commonly across multiple things, multiple cars. And if you know minimal car interface information, you can sit in any car on the planet and drive it. So that's kind of where I'm starting from. I was also starting very much from something that Deborah told me, which was that BIM allows the owner to be in charge of the decision-making much earlier than traditionally they could be. And that's a lot of people say that about BIM, but it made me think about what the owner can't say. It's nice with BIM that you can sketch up something quickly and then quickly tell the owner, well, if we choose this design, you get this many square feet at this much cost per square foot, and if we have that design, you have that many square feet at that much cost per square foot. But that doesn't talk about building performance and the performance of the systems, nor does it say, and the energy model is not performed by the performance expectations of the owner. So going off my introductory slide onto my second slide, but if you're looking at the big pack, slide 12, I say owners need to discuss service performance. I just talked about being able to participate in the design decisions. But if we look at, say, how HVAC control systems are usually bid, often they're a sub-bid of the mechanical engineer, so it's a sub-bid of a sub-bid. It's really hard to know what's going on down there. Often the architects and designers don't know how to specify it. They don't know who's controlling it. They might be able to pick a particular brand, but usually they don't. And so there's a big disconnect. Later on, we try to clean up the mess when we're commissioning things, but we haven't really said what performance we want out of the systems. So commissioning is kind of catch as catch can. We hope it's good. Often it means little more than no sparks when I tested the system, because we don't have a real way to talk about it. And I thought if we had a good way to talk about it, I'd measure success when the leasing agent for an owner says, we have this kind of performance from our system, so therefore you should pay top dollar or choose us rather than the guys across the street. Because once the leasing agents are caring about it, then that's a standard that facilities operations will be held to. That's a standard that the owners will want to specify when they build a building. Those are numbers then that will be carried on when a building is sold from one owner to another. And at that point, a lot of the stuff that we try to enforce by goodwill or people having good intentions or maybe in regulations becomes self-reinforcing because they become part of the value of the building. I would like to have a way that a tenant could say, this is part of the quality of service I expected as well. I think that until we can talk about it in those ways, that comes to the question, what do I mean by service? Today we usually specify system process. I've moved on to the slide with the dancing guy on it. It's number 11 on the big pack. No, number 13 on the big pack, rather. Today we specify system process rather than service. We tell you we've got compressors of a particular size. We tell you that the fans will do something. We talk about CFM. We talk about all kinds of mysterious things that the owners really don't want to say, and the tenant really doesn't know what they mean. And I think instead we should be talking about, so this is a healthy building because it has a higher than standard ventilation. This is a comfortable building. This is a building in which your office workers will be more productive throughout the life of the day because we can talk about these kinds of healthy services provided by the building. This is a building that won't smell funny even though you're next to a restaurant. Those are all services. And my thought of services was very much driven by somebody who was running about 3,500 big box drugstores. And he said, everybody talks to them about compressors. Everybody talks to them about systems. Everybody talks to them about energy efficiency. But there's never a day when he wants to get up in the morning and say, gee, I hope I can get in the compressor today. He had three services he expected from his building's mechanical systems. One was, thank heavens I'm here, which is a low standard. It just means it's nicer. You feel nicer when you walk through the door than you did before you walked through the door. And that's all it means. Very loose standard. He's got a regulated area in the back where he stores drugs. That's the standards there come from regulations. And he needs to not only provide them, but he needs to document them. And so the full services provide an environment according to the regulations and be able to document it. And in the back, he has one simple service, the storage area. And the service there is don't melt the chocolate. And he would like someone to come in his door and say, I cannot melt your chocolate for 30% less. He doesn't want to have people come in and talk about compressors. And that conversation, as it sat for a couple months, is one of the things that ended up in getting to here. On this picture, we always talk about the dancers going back and forth in the steps, but we never talk about what they look like. Is it smooth? Is it graceful? And I wanted to have a language to talk about that. If we go on to the next one, which begins, building service valuable will be based upon service primitives. I think we have something that looks a lot closer to the details that Deborah was talking about. We don't know what they mean, but, you know, there'll be... I just put up some words there. These words.
The moderator has disconnected.
Hello? Did I just lose everyone?
No, Toby, you're fine. It's just someone who was logged on as a moderator got disconnected.
Okay, good. I'm happy to talk to myself for a long time, but sometimes it's disconcerting later.
I'm going to go back off on mute.
Okay, so... So I'm thinking we're going to define what these primitives are. I'm not trying to prejudge them. I'm trying to put out something there that says this is the way. Let's imagine that we had an effective ventilation index defined. I don't know what it means. Is it some factor of the number of square feet, the height of the space, the number of cubicles per square foot divided by something else? I don't know. But we need to come all those factors together to be something that the leasing agent can talk about. Because that's when it becomes real. That's when owners will maintain it and manage it. That's when, instead of getting green in a few dozen buildings that have been built with great fanfare, it instead will be part of every building and every existing space, because it'll change the money that's used by the owners. So I named a few. You can imagine many more, but I was just trying to give some idea of what I mean by service primitive. And then we can start having enterprise interactions. It's believed that we can have great energy savings and great performance enhancements if we just start interacting not with buildings, but with the way the business runs in those buildings and the people who inhabit them. So I listed, you know, business calendars. So if I schedule a calendar and schedule a meeting, will the conference room respond to that meeting and give me the right performance during that time? As human resources changes work schedules, will that automatically change the operating posture of the building rather than meaning, oh, this only works if we remember to send a memo to some guy in the basement? Will external maintenance organizations be able to interact with the performance analytics of the building and come up and say, we recommend you fix this in this way, and this is what it'll cost per month until you do? I want to have a higher order conversation that ends up being business value delivered for business cost, rather than talking about low-lying processes. So if we go on to the next one, in which the title is Interactions with the World Are the Same as Internal Ones in the Web 2.0 World. Once we've moved to web services, then whether I'm interacting with someone inside the building or outside the building, it's a firewall question. It's a question of how I've got Cisco configured. It isn't a question of the building systems themselves anymore. So, and there's going to be more and more responses outside the building. Demand response for energy purchases is going to become more important in the future, which means there we're going to be bartering for energy savings. We can't be having those conversations if we're talking about actuators and sensors. I may warrant a building performance to my tenant. Well, that means I might want to have a third-party quality of service auditor. Michelle's going to talk about emergency scenarios, but if the building is going to respond, there's a couple things I know. I know the response has to be generic enough that you can send it to 100 buildings in the region rather than 3, and that somebody's going to want to be able to test and warrant that response inside the building on a case-by-case basis with a deep understanding of the internal building processes. And quickly, as we start getting into the wider world, we get building systems typically have had very dumb security systems.
I've got 3 passwords encoded in this web server. That's not going to work. You're going to have decisions that are based upon what your role is, what your contractual relationship is with the building, what your role is in this organization, and perhaps even whether you have a currently open work order in this building that lets you in. Those are all higher level performance of service rather than performance of process, and those are all going to make sense once we have some abstractions in place. So now moving on to the next slide, which is my last one, which is we can create a semantics of building service that lets owners evaluate, control, and sell performance. Once we do, then I believe lots of the things that we try to achieve with BIM, lots of the things that we try to achieve with leads, lots of the things we try to achieve from the sustainability initiatives of one kind or another all become things that are part of the evaluation of the building. So this gets us away from the problem we have right now, which is green buildings delivered and not performant 3 years later. I can work on upgrading my building, but I don't get any extra value when I sell the building. And I think if we create the proper semantics, proper way to discuss building service performance, then all those things become part of the value of the building and all of them will be watched much more closely. So that's my perspective on it. Over to, I think, the environment perspective. So that must be Bob Smith. Bob?
Bob, you need to do a *3, please. Let's see if Bob is still on the list here of those who are connected.
Do you want to go, Michelle, and we can have Bob jump backwards if
yeah.
we need to?
Yeah, we may need to do it. He's a 714, is that his area?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it says he's still on. He just needs to unmute. But, okay. Well, what we'll do then is when Bob gets back, we'll change positions, and I will go ahead and start. The way I had arranged my talk was, since it was supposed to be the end one, the basics and then a couple of examples, stretching the examples into the amount of time that was available for the talk. So instead, I'll just do the initial part and allow you guys to explore the slides further because these are all available to you for download and further discussion, you can certainly contact me or any of us. So for me, I would like to go to, yes, that's the perfect slide, the building service performance introduction. I'm going to be giving a different perspective here. I do work a lot at the low level of HVAC systems, building controls, fire panels, all of those things. But I also work at a much higher level of those who serve buildings and those who could have value added by the information that could be provided by buildings. And so that's the perspective I'm going to give you today. It's a situational impact perspective, more commonly known as an emergency response. And what I want to talk about is that buildings are a part of the larger community, and I'm going to go through some of the standard slides for BIM National, a little bit on OBIX, the Open Building Information Exchange, and then we'll see on the scenario. Is that Bob calling in? No, okay. All right, well then I will just continue. Next slide, please.
Please call out the slide title.
Slide title is Situation Management Information Needs. Now, situation management, such as an emergency response, does have a core set of information needs. In an emergency, we need to gather relevant knowledge from a lot of different sources, and we need to access and share that information in a standardized, structured manner. So we need to clearly cross domains and make correct connections in information at the time we need it. This is something that has to be prepared ahead of time. So when relevant data, even from seemingly disparate domains, are structured in an ontology, we can apply some rules for extending our core building knowledge and merge the data structured from other domains. Now, this is not necessarily a trivial thing, but as many of you from the Ontolog community know, merging of ontologies is not a trivial thing. But if we start out at least with a structured set and then start getting into the common vocabulary and common ways of handling rules, we have a structured approach. And that's something that we are, all of the, what Deborah showed you at first, those are things that are coming to be standardized, structured approaches. There are still multiple ways of working those things, and so we need to tighten that some, and we'll be getting into that and how they interact with other domain ontologies during the BSP project. So how could this be best done? Well, perhaps there are going to be attributes about the purpose of the items in your ontology, and that would be made available to the services that are serving the building or services from the building. And example, let me give you an example. You have a fire in your building, and of course you want the fire department to connect up to the closest possible to fire or water source of water that's safe. In the building architecture city planning domain, there's only the word hydrant, and that word hydrant is something that can be in relationship to the building. The hydrant has a relationship of is closest to the building. So now we also have that hydrant. If we can add on a purpose, we've got an attribute of it is supply of water, then when we go into the building itself and start looking at the fire domain and the way they break down their names, they not only have a hydrant, but they also have something called a standpipe. Now, a standpipe is simply really a hydrant that could be inside. It could be in an inside stairwell. It could be on the external of the building. But it's a second word, but has the same purpose, is supply of water. And there may be other attributes that you need to nitpick over of, you know, whether the clamp size for the hose will fit and those sorts of details. But essentially, we need to start looking at what is the purpose, what is the goal of the things in our domain, and how do they cross over to other domains so that we're dealing with supply water to put out the fire, and the goal is put out fire. So how do we do that? I would say we need our information services, our reasoning services, our action services. We need services, services, services. And we need to be able to get the information about, well, not only are there hydrants out there, but we know about these standpipes in the building as well. And so we need to be able to have ways to police that. We need to share policies. We need to create a common picture. And that includes our vocabulary. And that includes the rules that take that vocabulary and allow them to be combined with words that are different in another vocabulary but truly mean the same thing. Now, the aspects of data exchange can be viewed as services also, or they can be parts of services, and they're all something that will aid in performance metrics. Yet we're a stretch from the traditional reporting where metrics are generally considered. Here we show the power of services that are backed by a performance rating. Some of the data resides in the ontology itself as an entity or a relationship, an attribute or a rule, and other parts of the data generated can be aggregated or from a variety of sources, or they can be presenting the data in a compelling visualization, or perhaps they're parsing the data to extract just what is needed for the critical situation at hand. This slide is kind of my catch-all that we really need to cross domains and exchange data, and that's why I spend a long time on this one. Let's go to the next one. It's 29 in the large set, and it's called Why an Ontology? And I'll leave the text there and use some of the background words that are actually these sentences here are from the NBIM standard presentation. A BIM is great, but without it being standardized, you can get locked into the limits of one vendor's product. Here's another quote. We are encouraging the use of the IFC, Industry Foundation Classes, based information exchanges which link us to the International Community Open Standards. This is excellent. This is how we're going to make this work. Next, we need to have commonly organized information throughout the life cycle so other software products outside our area of responsibility can find and read the data. Just screams to me, services. And it's right there in the NBIMs and the BIM and the Building Smart documentation. And the last one is, the quote is, we will need keep the data alive and usable for 50 to 100 years. This is no small order. It can only be accomplished with a standardized approach. And we're suggesting with the BSP that that standardized approach has to extend beyond just the construction, the design and construction phases, and move through the entire life cycle. And that's what we're going to be measuring, is not just things in the early stages, which are important, but also things that are throughout the entire life cycle. Next slide, please. That is the NBIM's business process. I'm not going to go into detail on this, just pointing out that there is a documented business process. And one of the things we really need to look at is that process and how to make processes something that can be standardized and show their relationships. It's something that we can do in an ontology. And that will help us to identify the information needs that flow throughout the entire model. And we want to formalize that information flow. So this is all value added to every service that needs to interact with the underlying data and also to understand the relationship between the higher level information that would be available from the BIM models and from the business processes associated with those models. Next slide, please. This is National BIM Standard Definition of BIM Building Smart. This is their official definition. Once again, I'll let you read the definition, and I'll say here that the key point is that this is the agreed-to standard definition for the building information model. And the key points are it is digital, so a machine can read and analyze it. It includes the entire life cycle from inception onward. It supports collaboration, and it shares information and supports interoperability. My comments on those four are that these key points are included in a good ontology design, population, and maintenance. And that's why we need to have that as an integral part of this project. And then the last key point is that it is an open standard and free. And the comment there is that the additional key point of open really does aid us in adoption and ongoing enhancement participation. We can do our value adds as vendors. We can do value adds through services, but making the core structure of it open the basic ontology, the understanding of relationships, making all of that open will only help us to get to our goals of services for buildings and services in buildings much quicker. So I'm going to go through a few slides now that give you kind of an overview of the pictorial view of the relationship. So the next slide, please. This slide is taken from an NBIMS presentation. It's called Hierarchical Information Relationships. And these next few slides are to give you a sense of the information available in buildings and how it might be used in situation response. So two standards are the emergency data exchange language with the distribution element. It's often called EDXL, EDXL-DE for the distribution element. Or there's a tighter or lighter, both terms could apply, common alerting protocol, the CAP standard. These are data standards for distribution of situational data and alerts, and they are adopted by a lot of the major, at least U.S., and now also European Union's primary communications for alerting. These standards are required by DARPA, by DOD, by FEMA. I'm missing a lot there. There's a lot more out there. So these are going to be, and our Department of Homeland Security, these are all going to be integral and are already becoming integral to exchanging information and alerts. So let's add that ability for emergency response to the communication with the building. And how we do that, can come along as a service. But the terms and structure for it, that's something that needs to be defined on common ground so that we can provide metrics, so that we can do performance analysis that would cross vendors, that would cross even different types of situations and responses. Next slide, please. This slide, Hierarchical Building Information Relationship, basically it's a busy slide, a lot of information, and that's what I want you to take away from it, is that there's a lot of information. Services to handle the information are based on type, usage, and most importantly, the goal that can help give you just the data you need when you need it. So in emergency, that's very, very important. You don't want to be overloaded with all the information about a building. You want the data you need when you need it. So let's go on to the next slide that briefly defines OBICS here. Open Building Information Exchange. This slide is taken from a set from OASIS, which is a standards body. That also was the standards body behind CAP and the EDXL that I mentioned just a little bit ago. The Open Building Information Exchange, OBICS, standard is used for the building data and operational procedures. We can have a distribution element that routes this building system to the building system with OBICS as a payload. So we can say, do something in this building, or I have a contract here that says I can take your HVAC and not take any air from the external world because we're now currently in a situation where you wouldn't want to breathe that air. So those are the sorts of things that we can do by bringing in some other standards and combining them with BIM. The next slide, I'm just going to briefly, OBICS 2.0 stack. You can look at this more closely to see what's available and will be available within that specification. The 2.0, version 1 is what's out now. But notice, please, that in the green part of the box, in the 1.0 foundation, we already have that web services. And web services, that's just saying that services are being provided via the web, which I think is going to be a very common architectural approach. That's already supported within the OBIX, and we should be looking at not reinventing wheel and using that where feasible. So I would like to, if possible, if Bob is available, I'd like to have him give his talk, and then we can come back and do one scenario.
Can you hear me now?
Okay. So if we could, I'll do my wrap-up after. We'll do one scenario after Bob, and then we'll go into the ratification of the charter, I believe, is after that. So I guess we need to get back to slide number 18. And I'll turn it over to Bob.
Thank you very much. And my perspective is basically something new and something old. We've heard a lot about the environment in the recent slide 32 on the hierarchy information relationships. You saw we start out with the world, drop down to the next level of a country, drop down to a county, and then bingo, we've got a city. Underneath that city, there are sites, and underneath that site in this hierarchical relationship, which provides a framework, there are natural assets and real property assets. And over the last 50 years or so, there has been an incredible amount of regulation intended to regulate, specify, determine, and basically reject architectural projects and plans that don't conform. And they were originally, as you well know, fire and safety, human life, earthquake, tornado, what have you. And then about 30 years ago, we had environmental concerns and clean air, clean water, and a focus on very tight regulation and a specification of a very large number in each separate silo of what's required. And it was a growth industry for consultants, and a very large number of documents were printed, sacrificing a very large number of important trees to kind of publicize and make building enforcers and building regulators at the local level in that city aware and able to reject proposals that violated certain principles. We've seen within the last year or so kind of a major shift away from that perspective on the environment. And with the death of environmentalism, a book, article, Nordhaus and Schellenberger, a great increase in combining energy in the environment using some additional processes. So I'm intrigued with kind of exploring with you something brand new in my mind, is the notion of looking at regulation. And in California, we have an AB 32, which is a Kyoto protocol to reduce emissions by the year 2020 to the level in 1990, and then going significantly further out to the year 2050. Now, it's one thing to pass a legislation like this. It's another thing entirely to make it scientifically sound, politically fair, economically feasible. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. Environment, process, and if we can move to the second slide, slide 19. This perspective has basically three questions I'd like to explore, and really the answers are, to some extent, easily discovered, and other areas just impossible to really deal with. Right now, we need to look somewhere down the road. What does our charter mean by a framework, and what do we mean by a built environment? I'm going to go through the Analog Summit's dimensions map to kind of explore very briefly the idea of a framework. And then how do we deal with this environment idea that's so fuzzy with so much greenwashing having occurred? It's a good idea in thinking of ontologies and conceptual discussions to really find a referent. What the hell do we really mean? What are we looking at? What can we touch? What are the atoms? As opposed to what are the digits, and the importance of reference models that we can all point to, and especially the recent capabilities of not just two-dimensional CAD-CAM drawings, but the addition of three dimensions, cost, and time dimensions, all of which get wrapped up into BIM and provide a foundation for us to build together. My second question, how can this environmental process perspective become useful for discussing pilot projects? I'm currently working on about four different pilot projects at a very primitive level, and I see a tremendous value in looking back at the foundation and materials and the Analog Forum that gets us the idea. What we're trying to do is look at documents in terms of their deeper structure and how documents created 20, 30 years ago were trying to optimize certain values in the regulations, such as the assumptions that water is basically free and gas is basically cheap. And as we think about how a city decides the size of its roads, the density of population, the use, mixed use, single use, specialized use, and as the price of gas goes up and up, how do we provide power and energy, decrease the need for cars and related services? So anyway, the idea is look at the deep structure. I see a good role of this effort as being a semantic broker. There's lots and lots of overlapping BSP domains. I've recently joined NBIMS, and I've recently joined Smart Building Alliance. I've got my subscription to BIMstorm OPS. And I can see a lot of specialized task force that are doing important, exciting things that we don't need to do. We just need to be able to understand who's doing what and act as a catalyst and cross-pollinate between a lot of these important ideas, because when I get into a meeting, it's very difficult for me to talk and express what I know they're talking about. Simply because, as Toby and others have said, we just don't have the language. So my third question, when do we start a conversation about BSP pilots that were being discussed? For example, city councils, green task forces, chambers of commerce, Sierra clubs. And I guess the answer to that question, I think, is either right now or sometime in the next several months. If we can go to slide 20, I've got the basic dimensions for the BSP framework, for a possible framework. And I'm going to spend just a little time on this. It's a very powerful document the communique from last year's ontology summit, but you'll notice there's a pragmatic side on the right, and there's a semantic side on the left. Ontology bridges those two sides. Under pragmatics, we've got domain and a large number of practitioners with domain knowledge, application knowledge, functional domain. And on the left-hand semantic side content, we've got stuff, things, and relationships. Those things and those relationships were clearly identified in the last speaker's presentation. Moving to the next slide, let's talk about reference in the built environment. And so we can move from a concept level into some reference. And what you see is a specific city. California has about 500 of these objects called cities. And Huntington Beach is maybe the 30th largest. And the surprising thing about these objects called cities is they have common properties, common attributes, and common relationships. And a template built for one could easily serve with minimal customization for 500 other cities in California and perhaps in other states, in other countries. Downtown Czech Republic and Yugoslavia, for example, Beijing, Sydney. You live in a city, and you work in that city, and you shop in some kind of a city, and taking Toby's idea of some high-level abstraction, we can make a much rather robust understanding of how building services fit into not just the building, but into the neighborhood, which happens to be a new LEED standard coming up in 2009. The next slide, please, will be the built environment happens. Very confusing slide, and it's almost impossible to explain easily, but if you back off a little bit, you'll see there's three basic ideas. There's the state of California has general planning guidelines. These guidelines were created a decade ago in response to problems of a decade ago. It ignores completely the energy crisis. It ignores the climate problem. And in an effort to kind of integrate that general plan required of each of these 50 cities, which makes 500 cities, which makes that template a lot, there's an effort to take a functional approach by sources of funding responsible agencies and try to get at the costs. We have a planning department that's pretty good sized, along with a building department and economic development department, all of which have a similar structure and process, and they go through a process, let's move to the next slide, to look at how you balance all of these issues. And our existing regulations I'm working through, it should be environmental assessment. There you go. As I mentioned, there is an ontology implicit in these regulations, and some deeper structure that can be extracted. Some of the structure is not too well hidden. It's right there, pretty obvious. Land use, recreation, culture, biology. And each of these dimensions have between 3 to 12 subsections of questions, and each of those questions have 1 to maybe 25 data sources, all of which are talking about oftentimes different stuff. We were talking about hydrants, water sources, and that just scratches the opportunity to use XML, XSD, terminology and to look at the next major set of legislation. In California, we have an energy audit capability called Title 24, and the legislation and the drafting of the language is just about through. We get a lot more legislation that's coming up with the AB 32, the implementing of greenhouse gas emission, and public comment. So there's a good opportunity to start to get services defined, terms defined consistently, and to make use of the federal enterprise architecture, business reference model efforts of formalizing services, at least in within a large state like California, the eighth largest country in the United States, in the world. How do we motivate people to begin thinking, particularly in the architectural engineering, construction, and building owner, of the value of taking a BIM approach and an ontology approach, an environmental process? If we could move to the next slide, also one of the important topics in time, and trying to visualize the amount of time that's now spent in preparing old-fashioned environmental reviews and processes without BIM. This is an example, and a short example, and I won't go into it, but you can see the opportunities that we can collapse this down to a week as opposed to 10 months to 2 years. So we can move to the next, motivating how easy it might be to give some demonstration projects on the application of BIM. One of the projects that I'm seeking help on and getting some help is to look at demonstrating, for example, London Live, a BIM storm effort late last month, building a new university, basically a set of hotels around the university. I'm working on some related efforts of connecting through BIM storm, BIM and visualization techniques that you can take to the city council, you can take to the mayor, you can take to the planning commission, and you can take to the Chamber of Commerce and show quite explicitly, you know, how visual this world can be. We can tie the budget. We can tie the capital improvement budget projects. We can do so much, and it remains to simply get their attention and to subtly but carefully and aggressively make the case for BIM and for business processes in articulating, pulling together, integrating building service performance. And that's it. I've got questions down in the next slide, but let's hold the questions till later. Thank you very much.
Michelle, do you want to do your scenarios? Michelle?
All right. Oh, is that, am I unmuted now?
Yes.
Okay. Would you like me to, we're at, let's see, almost in, not quite an hour, we're an hour and 20 minutes in. So, do we want to go through one scenario? Or do we want to get on with the charter?
Maybe, can you just go through it fast just to
I think it's useful because one of the things we're doing is trying to break the paradigm of the process, and your scenarios do a good job of that. So I think it's useful.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's go to what would be slide 37, and it says scenario one.
and I need to get the VNC. Ah, here we go. So in this scenario, I'm going to stretch our concept of services and going to bring people into that, and I'm going to bring other data sites in so that we're not just talking about energy service within a building. We're talking about services that can be improved by information from that building for the wider community, as well as community services that, when they are provided, they can help multiple buildings. So let's go to the next slide, please. That this comes from a presentation I gave a couple years back at the OASIS Standards Body Symposium. And the whole thing started out with it was a dark and stormy night, and went through a full scenario of what could happen in an emergency and how it would interact with different systems. Here I've snipped out just the pieces that can give us this scenario. So here we see we've got the clouds coming in. Next slide. And then we've got a security guard who has some limited data. You can see out the window as well as what's appearing on his screens. Next slide. But that security guard isn't going to have the full picture without having information that's down from sensors, from actuators, that things that have actually detected something. So this next picture is a weather station set up on one of the on a rooftop. These are becoming far more available. Schools are providing them. Businesses provide them. The facility I work at, we have a weather center on our rooftop. And data can be collected here at the building, but not just kept for the building's use. It can help the wider community to understand what's going on. We could also add other types of sensors for biological or chemical or other types of things that, you know, we'd like to know about. So let's, the next slide just shows, you know, another view of one of the cameras. This is actually from the lab we had at Honeywell at the facility where we're at in the spring. We've since moved, so I don't have knowledge of the exact setup on the new one, but they were kind enough to share these with us. And the next slide shows one of the basic screens that give some trend information, the pressure that things are, air pressure, where things currently are at, and then things over time. That's type of information that is good knowledge for, you know, what's going on at your building, but really is better when it's aggregated with the rest. So this is where a service can be provided to a wider community. And so now we're to showing that the – whoops, we went backwards. Let's go forwards two slides. Yeah, that's good. That's good. So at this stage, we've got some sensors that can be directly tied into federal systems or state systems or whatever the region is that's set up to handle the NOAA weather services. And we also have trained storm spotters who can call in that information. Then from those centers, they disseminate the information. So that's what's going on in this slide. So next slide, please.
Yeah, I think someone is switching the slides alongside me. So you probably want to click the refresh tab if your slide is not refreshing, rather than hitting an arrow or page down, which invariably sort of skips slides. So.
Okay. So what folks are looking at is the city. Is that correct? Nope. Okay.
Okay.
I see it refreshing again.
Okay.
Okay. So there's.
Let me know.
Here we are. Yes. So we're looking at a building that has one of these weather centers on the roof. But that information alone isn't good enough. It needs the information from the actual weather system, what's going on. So that information does come to the building. The building can respond. Next slide, please. This particular building looks like it's out, not much around it. However, if you think there's a tornado coming through, if you see a tornado coming through and you realize it's right next to the train yards, and the train yards were really, that building's probably just a couple miles from this downtown city. So the next slide will, from after the city, the next slide just shows that the tornado is actually coming in. So let's go to slide 49, which gives us the tornado is coming in. What do we actually tell the building? And this is how we can combine information from various and standards. We can combine their usage to really meet the right need. The slide you should be seeing has OVIX payloads in the distribution element example. And that slide shows you've got your tornado, it touches down. You've seen somebody spotted that, they've made an alert. That alert goes out. Well, we'd certainly like to know in our building that there's a tornado coming our way. So it goes out, but it doesn't just go out to buildings. It goes out to all other types of facilities, the rail yard. We've got a chemical plant. And then other recipients. This could also be a outdoor play area. It could be quite anything. But specifically in the building management world, we are looking at an OBIX payload. So it's got a contract that says, hey, the National Weather Service alert has just occurred. Please invoke that contract. Well, with that contract, I'm looking inside it, and I'm matching the data points up, and all right, well, then we need to invoke our operations here that there's a tornado, and so we need to take shelter and send that alert to all of the folks in the building, plus request a safe chemical containment operation. So if the facility is a chemical plant, it's going to do a safe shutdown of its process and contain its chemicals before that tornado hits. And if possible, that they can do that shutdown, it's been shown that there's a lot less hazardous materials cleanup that has to occur. But, of course, building owners and operators do not want to shut down a process unless it's really something that's going to be in their benefit. This is a case where you really want to make sure that you're not giving too many false alarms. You want to really try and make your service performance high and the payoff high as well. So I'll just continue just briefly. Let's skip through quickly the next one that shows, okay, so the building has partly collapsed. And the next slide is that there is a command center and someone needs to react to the incident. So the building has sent out information if its connections are still available, or other facilities such as cameras in the area will send information that there is damage in that building. So when they get there, they realize that they need to, the next slide, please, where they're doing cleanup exercise. So if they determine that they need to remove the debris, and doing it by hand and with the limited tools they have is not going to get, say, all of the workers out of that building in time, that they really need heavy equipment, then we can go to one more standard that is in our suite of tools, also of the EDXL Emergency Data Exchange Language, and it's the Resource Messaging Service. And this service can be from the incident commander who's actually at the scene, if you have a qualified professional on scene, they will take command. Otherwise, that may be your security guard, or it may be your building facilities management. That depends on your pre-plan, and that's a big thing that is stressed in these situations, is that every building should have a pre-plan for every conceivable type of event and be then flexible to adapt, because the events never are exactly precise. But with this one, we could start out even saying that the incident commander is the security guard, but he's got that guy who's the trained storm spotter, and he knows he's a resource that's available, and he has a ham radio. So if that's the only way to get the information out, he can do it. Or if his site's emergency management system is up, he can send it out directly, and then he can broadcast what is the resource we need. Well, we need heavy equipment, and then the negotiation that goes with that with that standard can take place for the benefit of that building, and obviously the benefit of the occupants of that building. So I'm going to close that one as far as the scenario. The other scenario I had, I'll let you look at on your own. It's a spill of anhydrous ammonia that takes place, and why your buildings should be concerned about it. So go ahead and take a look at that one on your own. It starts at slide 56. And let's go down to the slide 64. What I wanted to show through that scenario was that information was coming from the building to aid the community, and information that was gathered from other services was brought back to the building to provide it aid. Now, of course, emergency management is a rather extreme case, but there are many, many services out there that you're going to want to be able to provide data, allow them to aggregate it, and then that will actually aid you in your decision-making for what you need to do within your facility. So moving forward, once the framework is in place, which is what we're working on within the BSP group, then we've got the opportunity for beneficial services and sources, and that'll be endless, because everybody's going to come up with a new service, a new option. That's the way of business. It's the way of our world. So I'd like to have us discuss that. I don't know if next we should be doing the charter or the discussion. Deborah, what's the agenda?
Well, maybe we could adopt the mission, just because that's a faster to do, and then the charter, I don't know if everybody who's on this call has had a chance to read it or not, or if we, is that something, Peter, that typically we would adopt right now on the spot, or something within a certain time period?
I think since it has been around for a little bit and people have had time to review that, adopting the charter sort of properly launches this project.
Okay.
So I guess that would be the best thing to do.
And the charter page is off of the main page. If we scroll down, we're still on the talk.
Well, and just to explain to everyone else that's on the call right now that there was a huge flurry of activity over the last week or so. about the charter, and a couple points came up, and we had some discussion online and offline and everywhere, and about what kind of tools, you know, the owner wants to use a mouse, the owner wants to use a keyboard, from that all the way through a bunch of different things. So the charter has had a lot of massaging lately, and, you know, as the framework evolves, there's the whole direction will go certain ways, but I mean, this is kind of the meat of it.
Okay. The page is up on the VNC now. The location of it is off of the Building Service Performance main page. There's a link not too far down that says it's got a slash BSP charter. And that would link you to the page where it is. And what we've got here is our mission, the primary problems to resolve, the purpose, goals, and objectives as the, purpose, objective, goals. And that those first three parts constitute our charter. There's more information after that that's related, more detailed planning documentation that folks are certainly, we want you to go through it. We want to see you to see where you can get involved. But the part that we would be actually ratifying today, the charter, is the first three sections.
So I guess I would move to adopt the charter, which includes the mission within it.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm motion to adopt it. Okay. And that's seconded by Michelle. Okay. Great. And then let's see, what exactly is next? Should we schedule the next call? Do you want to focus on one of these issues first?
Deborah, we've only seconded it. We need to we actually need to have the folks who are present say, yay, verily, they want to adopt this. If there's any discussion, that would be okay. Otherwise, hopefully you've had the time to read this over. So I'd like to just call for a vote.
I might even suggest if nobody objects to the adoption that we summarily adopt the charter by those
by acclamation.
If there are no objections, I move that this charter be adopted as written.
Okay.
Hearing none, it is adopted. And we are... I'm sorry, did I hear? Was there a interrupt? Then the charter is adopted, and as I said, there's more material on that page. As you scroll down, you'll see after the charter that there are, what are the sections here? We've got performance success indicators, a discussion going on that, how the BSP framework can be used, some use case examples. And there's some further related things on governance and the roadmaps and the resources and skills. So a lot of room. The charter basically just sets the framework for us to go forward. I hand it back to you, Deborah.
Okay, so I guess, you know, it's a lot to tackle. We can't take it all on at one time. Don't know if we want to pick one sort of theme to stick with for a little while or just plunge on in and schedule the next call. I'm not sure what would be most beneficial. I would also like
to see if they're willing to, some of the people who have been lurking, who are now sitting on the call, if they could send email to the list presently as soon as they've signed up saying what it is they want. I think the four or five people who've been talking all along have a good feel for each other, but that would be a good way to engage the newcomers to let the old-timers find what they're up to and start having conversations rather than just reciting at each other.
And we do have about 15 minutes here for discussion. So we can open the floor up. There is one question that's been posted to the chat room.
Before that, may I find out if everyone on this call is already a member of OntoLock and a member of BSP of the list? I mean, usually the delineation as to whether you are a member of OntoLock is whether you are subscribed to the OntoLock forum list, and whether you're a member of the BSP team is delineated by whether you have subscribed to the BSP forum list. That, of course, still leaves the question on whether a person is lurking or observing, or whether one is an active member. But either way, let's find out if everyone is already on the team, and if not, whether people would have objections to automatically being subscribed right after this meeting, rather than they're doing it sort of on their own separately. Yeah, I see a lot of new names. I mean, from an OntoLock forum perspective.
I'm going to quickly interject because I'm also have to sign off shortly. I, in my case, would object because I listened in on this with not a clear understanding of what you guys were up to or what your focus was. And now that I've heard your presentations and seen them, I can think of somebody else in my organization who may be interested, but it certainly doesn't apply to what I'm trying to achieve at the moment. So I'm going to circulate the information I've gathered from this to that individual, but I wouldn't want to end up on a mailing list myself.
That sounds fine. So if we don't subscribe everyone, then we probably would want to request everyone who wants to be a member of this project to either go through, I mean, there are membership information on the front page or on the wiki homepage that people can go through, and then maybe email one of the co-conveners of this project to get subscribed.
And I'd like to add that OntoLock membership is about the quickest, fastest, easiest membership that you're going to do. Don't turn away from it because you think you're going to spend 3 days doing something. You probably could have done it while we were having the conversation about it so far.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's so obvious to those of us that are already a part of that community. This is a free membership. This is an open group. So the intellectual property restrictions over it are very clear. I would summarize them as, if you say something, you've shared it. You know, if you say something or you write something in the forum, then you've shared it. If you haven't said it or haven't written it down and shared it with it, then you have not shared it. So the intellectual property does not become an issue there. There's pages on the intellectual property, but for anyone who's concerned about that, the guidelines are very clear and very easy.
Well, and the other thing I would say, too, is that, you know, it seems like a lot of people, when they start to participate, they end up participating in a lot of things, and you have to choose. And I'm always trying to, like, balance out the time. But have found a really good overlap with what's happening with NBIMS. And also with what's happening, like, in this office and with this nonprofit, it's like you can kind of make your own thread to work across this and avoid duplication of effort. So even if it's a small role, it's so far, at least personally, been able to work to not feel like there's just 6 million things out there, but that they're all actually working towards the same goal. So if that helps at all.
Well, I'm not sure what other people are going to come to the conclusion, but as I said, I must go. But I wanted to thank you guys. I have a much clearer idea of what's going on, and as I said, I'm going to forward your information on to somebody else in my organization.
Great.
Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye.
Well, let's open the floor up for questions, either about the group or points that people think should be raised by the group. We've only got about 12 minutes here, so it won't be a long session, but if there's any questions or answers that are out there that you'd like to give to the committee. I guess everybody's just stunned. All right. Well, then, shall we say we've met our hour and a half, we've got our charter, we've given out the introduction. I certainly hope folks, if they do have any further questions, ideally, just join the Ontolog Forum and the BSP group, and then you can be a part of the forum discussions. It's not terribly heavy traffic, and you can thread them or however you want within your system.
How are you handling additional memberships? Are you is anyone open? Can I extend this opportunity to other people? Not necessarily within our organization.
Please do.
For
people we're working with on similar types of items,
mm-hmm.
I can invite them in. Okay.
Yes, this is an entirely open community, global community. So,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
One for their attendance.
Yeah, thanks everybody. Thanks a lot. And this is.
Are you going to tell us about the next meeting?
Yes, we should set up the next meeting. So, you want to do that in 2 weeks or 1 week? Does anyone have a preference for 2 weeks or 1 week?
2 weeks.
2 weeks,
yeah,
okay.
I would not be able to make it next week.
Okay, sounds good. So, next week, same time, same place?
And typically our meetings are booked for an hour and a half. This kickoff was longer, and we try to keep within the hour unless we've got, sometimes we really get some good discussions going and we'll go that full hour and a half. So we book an hour and a half, but often use an hour.
Try and keep it at an hour. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Sounds good. Okay, so I guess I move to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
Okay.
Second.
Thank you.
All right. Talk to everybody in a couple weeks.
A great meeting.
And online. Okay, good.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
The moderator has disconnected.
Peter, are you on?